there's still a lot of dairies that were using a loader bucket to remove forage from a bunker silo. And when you use that loader bucket, sometimes what was also happening was a feeder would go up to that bunker and get, let's say, a whole loader of silage from one specific region of that bunker. And of course, we can have a lot of variation across that bunker. And we did some investigative work to look at how much variation that was. Went out to dairies with a backhoe, basically, and dug a trench and took the top third, the middle third, and the bottom third, and then had that analyzed by labs looking at dry matter and all of the different nutrients that we look at. And just kind of a quick take home on that was that with haylage, dry matter on average varied by about 20% between one of those regions.
We want to thank the innovative companies and products whose support and trust make this podcast possible.
DietForge.ai, AI-powered feed formulation with non-linear ingredient modeling and real-time collaboration. Finally, modern software for modern nutritionists. Boost digestive health, performance, and profitability with Digesterone Prime, a feed additive that enhances digestion and immune function in dairy calves. Learn more at dsm-firmenich.com/prime. Excellent, a novel product for the management of hypocalcemia. It's uncomplicated excellence. Adiseo USA, producers of Smartamine M and MilkPay.com. Agrarian Solutions, research-backed microbial solutions for healthier, higher-performing livestock. AgriComfort, the cow comfort specialist, because her longevity is your legacy.
All right. Welcome, everyone, to this episode of the Dairy Podcast Show. I am your host for today, Gail Carpenter. I'm joined by Dr. Bill Stone, who is the Dairy Technical Services and Director of Commercial Sales at Diamond V. Bill is a Midwesterner by birth. He lives up in New York now. He actually did his undergrad and DVM at the University of Wisconsin-Madison, followed by a PhD at Cornell University. He was a practicing dairy veterinarian and worked for Cornell Extension for a time, and has been with Diamond V for about the past 19 years. So welcome to the podcast, Bill.
Thank you, Gail. Great to be here today.
Yeah, excited to talk with you. So we are chatting a bit today about TMR, and we're talking about narrowing that gap between the formulated ration and the consumed ration. And I'm really excited to chat with you about this today, because this is how I start every single intro to nutrition lecture that I have to give when I talk about dairy nutrition. And I think a lot of animal and dairy science students get tired of hearing about the three rations, right? There's the ration on paper, and then there's the ration that the cows receive in the bunk, and then there's the ration that the cows actually eat.
And some people try to expand it to a fourth one. There's the
what's actually absorbed? Is that
the digested absorbed? But three's enough, I think.
There you go. Yeah, no, wait. We don't need to overcomplicate it. But I always start with that because I think it's a great way to talk about most of the problems when we come on farm and talk about nutrition. It's not because your nutritionist screwed up balancing the diet. Balancing the diet's only a starting point. A lot of nutrition problems that we have is in what the cow is actually eating does not actually match what was balanced. So I'm really excited to talk to you about this more today. Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. So let's just get started a little bit generally. What got you interested in this area, and when did you really start working in this?
Well, I had a great applied dairy cattle nutrition program at Cornell. Mm-hmm. And one of my projects is working with the Cornell net carbohydrate and protein system model on dairy farms to try to see how it was working. Mm-hmm. And then that kind of led to my own dairy consulting business, which I had when I had finished my grad program. And really what I was seeing was pretty much what you were just saying. I could really work and try to make my super diet here, but wasn't always working. It wasn't always working as well as what I was hoping that it certainly would. And that was digging into areas that could be causing that to happen. So that was really in probably the late 90s that I started working more in this area. And one of the things that was going on then was that we were just starting to get defacers. But there's still a lot of dairies that were using a loader bucket to remove forage from a bunker silo. And when you use that loader bucket, sometimes what was also happening was a feeder would go up to that bunker and get, let's say, a whole loader of silage from one specific region of that bunker. And of course, we can have a lot of variation across that bunker. And we did some investigative work to look at how much variation that was. Went out to dairies with a backhoe, basically, and dug a trench and took the top third, the middle third, and the bottom third, and then had that analyzed by labs looking at dry matter and all of the different nutrients that we look at. And just kind of a quick take home on that was that with haylage, dry matter on average varied by about 20% between one of those regions. In corn silage, it was less. It was about 10%. But across dairies, it could still be huge. Like I remember one dairy was only a couple of percent. Another one, 55% variation in dry matter.
Wow. In corn silage?
Yep, in corn silage. So again, normally it's only about 10%. Mm-hmm. And so then we think about, well, what can we do about that? And obviously what we want really to do is to try to take care of that problem and try to get forage from across, preferably the entire face, pre-mix that forage before we feed it, really make it so it's really good and consistent, and that will make for a much more consistent diet, closer to where we want it to be. So that was kind of step one.
Typical fresh cow incidence of clinical hypocalcemia is 3 to 6%, while subclinical hypocalcemia affects 50% or more mature cows. Based on cutting-edge research, Exelite offers a new approach that is build effective and the ZDUs. For more information, visit www.protecta.com.
Talk to me a little bit more about forages. So how do you control that? What makes one dairy have a 10% variation in their corn silage in dry matter and another one have that 55%?
Yeah, very good question. I think the first one is getting together with a crops team and meeting with that crops team and reviewing, what are we after? You know, what are our goals? And that's going to be both with maturity and with thinking about things like dry matter. So let's just carry that a little bit further. With maturity, here in New York, we've got more mixed stands of alfalfa and legume than anywhere else. And we also have dairies that will have grasses. Grasses will typically be ready earlier than when alfalfa will. And so one thing, for example, a farm would be looking at doing to minimize this variation is thinking about their fields, thinking about when they need to start, and they're going to be starting with heavier grass fields first, then moving into mixed and finally to straight alfalfa. So we're trying to keep that overall quality of that forage more similar. And then, again, working on that dry matter, so that crops team is super important in thinking about what our goals are, how are they going to manage that so that, for example, with haylage, if our goals are a dry matter of 35 to 42%, how are we going to get it into that window there really closely? Another big one is, as our dairies have gotten bigger, we've got really, really often, there's multiple choppers that are out chopping, and we got a lot of forage that's coming in. Where it used to be, we might have one chopper and we'd go with a progressive wedge as we're filling that bunker. Now, as it's coming in faster and faster, we can start taking that wedge and flattening it and making it more of a platform that we're bringing up. And that also helps to minimize that variation because we're spreading it out over a much larger area, that forage. And again, top to bottom, it's getting spread out more as well. So that as we feed through the bunker, I see some farms that are doing this that have, again, hopefully as short a harvest window as we can get, but then also really doing a good job of forage management where we have very minimal variation in forage from one end of the bunk to the other. So those are some things that the farm can be doing to help with that as well.
What about, you know, not every corn silage season goes perfectly, right? I remember one year I was...
It does here in New York. It's always perfect.
Oh, well, then that's my problem. Yeah.
That's right.
I remember one year I had just moved to Iowa and I was helping cover the silage at the Iowa State Dairy. and we had a weather event coming through, and it was a wall cloud, and I'd never seen a wall cloud before. I was like, oh, that's so cool. I was just sitting and watching it come in and not doing my job. And the two kids from Iowa there were like scrambling, trying to get everything, because they knew what that meant, that we were about to get dumped with a bunch of rain. That's like a little bit outside of acts of God, or a little bit outside of our control, generally speaking. So, you know, you have a rain event, or you have something that doesn't go quite right during the silage season. How do you kind of manage that feeding throughout the year? Because you're 16 months, probably, you're feeding out that corn silage.
Well, first, let's stick it with helage. Ideally, what we could do is cover it. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Do a quick cover. It's more likely to happen with helage because typically the bunk isn't as big, and it's possible we could do a quicker covering. Mm-hmm. Corn silage, typically our bunks get so big, it's extremely difficult to ask that farm to try to do a temporary cover to prevent the rain. So it's going to come in. The biggest thing we can really do is, well, I take one step back. Let's say that, unfortunately, we do get hurricane aftermath that comes through here in New York.
That's right.
And let's just say it's corn silage shopping season, and a farm's right in the midst of it. They're halfway through. Here comes the hurricane prediction. Very high probability we're going to get blasted for several days. There's an example to do a cover. Mm-hmm. Very high probability we're going to get dumped on really, really badly. So that would be the temporary cover. Otherwise, what we're trying to do is, boy, as much as I can, minimize the amount of time we have that bunker open. So trying to do things to narrow that harvest window. And that truly is bringing in those multiple choppers. Then on top of that, of course, we've got all the packing weight to go with that to really get good densities as well. So that's, I think, about the best we can do.
Sometimes your best is all you got. Yeah. So that kind of leads me to my next question then, is you're a nutritionist working in diet formulation. What can you do on the formulation side to kind of reduce that gap between the ration on paper and the ration the cow eats?
The first one we do is we try to know what our ingredients are, obviously. And with the forages, that's a forage analysis that we're going to do to look at all of our typical components that we want to evaluate. With our concentrates, typically we're using a book value, but we need to make sure our book values are appropriate. We're trying to use sources that may not vary as much. That's another thing you can do. Try to use ingredients that are more reliable. And another big one, which can really be of benefit, and I learned this from Dr. Norman St. Pierre.
Ah. So
Norman, a big loves math and loves thinking about things like that.
That's a mild way to put it. Yeah.
Okay. So he made the point looking at the variance contributed by ingredient. First of all, that's why we take that analysis. So now we've taken, instead of guessing about something, we've narrowed it tremendously, right? And we do a great job of taking our sample. That's also super important, mm-hmm. right? But then the amount of variation contributed by a given ingredient, it's a function of the variation in that ingredient times that ingredient amount squared. Okay, ingredient amount squared. So just for example, if we had two corn silages going in at 10 pounds, we had the 20 pounds of corn silage going into a diet. If we had one corn silage and we had, let's say it's variation of whatever, 0.1, but it was 20 pounds. So 20 squared is 400. Okay, so 400 times that amount of variation that occurs in that analysis. If we have two corn silages with the same variation, it's that variation times 10 squared. 10 times 10, 100. Okay, so we have 100 times this variation, and we've doubled that because we've got 200, see what I mean? Versus if we only had one ingredient, it's 400 times that. So by having more ingredients in a diet, we can actually make a diet more consistent. We're relying less on that given ingredient to be exactly right. And by doing so, again, we can make a more consistent diet. So that's one really for nutritionists to keep in mind. And it's both with forages on a farm. If we can have multiple corn silages, multiple haylages, that's super. Obviously, we have to be able to keep up with the faces. We have to think about our feeders, making sure they've got plenty of time to do the job appropriately. But that's an example of how we can reduce variation. And likewise with the concentrate ingredients, instead of having only one protein source, one, let's say, bypass, one degradable, if we can have several, we're making the diet more consistent.
Evonik is committed to help supply a growing world population with healthy and affordable animal protein while prioritizing animal welfare, the efficient use of natural resources, and food safety. Evonik's expertise in low-protein diets and supplemental amino acids help ruminant farmers around the globe to enhance feed efficiency, reduce costs, improve animal health, and lower greenhouse gas and nitrogen emissions.
So this, I think this is all building to something that Diamond B is pretty well known for, and that's the TMR audit. So do you want to explain to us what a TMR audit is?
If we think about, one way I like to start as I think about explaining this is, if we think about our milking system, we've got typically lots of things going on there to monitor that milking system, make sure it's being done properly. And just for example, we'll have a set protocol, milking protocol for a dairy. And we've got workers that are trained in that protocol. And that training needs to be done repeatedly. And the milking system, we need to check the vacuum, check the liners, the inflations, the units, the vacuum regulator, make sure everything's right. And that typically is done with the milking system. With the feeding system, often, mixer wagon worked, cows got feed, we're good, right? We're good. So a TMR audit is essentially something designed to try to evaluate that feeding system and job shadow the feeder, really watch how that individual is doing every step along the way from obtaining that forage to making that diet, delivering that feed, take a step back, how they're using the mixer wagon. The mixer wagon is a really big part of it. And now finally delivering that feed. And then with that delivered feed, collecting 10 samples of that TMR that was delivered from that mixer wagon, from that one load, and try to have it represent the first 10%, second 10%, et cetera, of that feed that was delivered. And that then is run through the Penn State Particle Separator. And we're looking at the distribution of the coarse, medium, and fines along the length of that bunk. And what we want it to look like is straight lines. So, all the pan is nice and straight. That means we've got grain and minerals consistent along the length of that bunk. The next two, the middle screen and the top screen, again, very consistent. The reason for that is that, unfortunately, cows don't go along the bunk and take a little bite from all along the bunk, right? We know they eat in regions. And if we've got this variation all along the length of that load, then we have, of course, the opportunity for a lot of variation be occurring within our cows as well. So that's really how it's done. Following the feeder, seeing what's really happening on the dairy, what's really happening with the mixer wagon, how that really is working, and looking for opportunities to help improve that. So that, again, that diet, that TMR that the cow's consuming is more like the one that was formulated.
Yeah, we'll probably edit this out because I don't think our podcast listeners won't be able to see this, but I got a stack of the TMR feeder guides.
You can't edit that out, Gail. We need that up here. Yeah. That's great.
Well, maybe it'll show up in the video. I am showing it, but people can still see what I, so I have a stack of these TMR feeder guides, but the cool thing about them is that they're offered in Spanish too. Right. And I had a big stack of these. And so this is the funny part of the story. I had a big stack of these and I was like, but I'm out of the English versions. And then I realized I just had to flip it over.
Yeah,
and
they were, there you go. had to read further. That's right.
Yes, exactly. But they are really, really comprehensive and great figures in here. I don't know if you, I think these are a few years old. I'm not sure if you're still making these or if they've been updated. But I have a stack of these right along the corn silage manual that that Pioneer makes. Two really great resources for just forage production and feeding. So
there have been updates, not huge changes, but there have been updates in that manual. It is still available. Certainly it's something we try to help producers with.
Yeah. A lot of the basics have stayed the same, I'm sure.
Exactly.
But we're constantly trying to improve. So yes. Well, and you collect a lot of really interesting data when you're doing these TMR audits, and you're doing them on a lot of different farms all over the country. So I'm sure you guys have a great wealth of information there, and are able to pull some really cool insights out of that data. So what have you guys found to be some of the primary problems that lead to variation in TMR?
First of all, there's been all kinds of very interesting observations, things that one would not have expected happening that are happening. But probably one of the, I'd say number one is simply equipment wear. So equipment wear, of course, something can break outright if the PTO drive shaft breaks. You know, I got a problem with my mixer wagon. It's not working at all. When an auger is wearing or a kicker plate is wearing, it's something that very slowly happens. And very slowly, it's not doing the job that it used to do. But you don't see that. You see everything working. But again, gradually, it's losing its effectiveness and not doing the job it should. And now we have this inconsistent diet. The amount of time that takes is, of course, varies tremendously across the dairy on how much a mixer wagon is being used, how much it's being, I'll say, abused. Mm-hmm. And the abused part would be like, I'm going to drop round bales in it to process. I'll put big blobs of straw in there to process that. So that's much harder on the mixer, or even in some of our Western herds, really high ash levels. We got a lot more ash going in with that forage. That's wearing things down more. So we've seen just one example, a large dairy out west had a TMR out at 1 month, slightly over a month later, horrible results. The mixer had worn that much over a 1 month time period. So that's how much it really can, I guess, vary across areas. So that would be one real big one. Another one I've seen more lately, as our dairies have gotten bigger, and they're looking at how can I make this feeding system more efficient. We have more triple screw vertical augers coming in. And they can be massive machines that are very long. And now we think about, let's just say first it's a single auger. Yeah, if it's level or not, it makes a difference, but not a huge difference. And we have two augers, and it starts to make a difference how level that mixer wagon is. With a triple auger mixer, it becomes much more critical because now we've got that much greater distance to try to move feed along from the back to the front or the front to the back. So it's much more important that it really is level to get an appropriate mix. So those are two real big ones. I mean, other things like mixing time, people thinking about how many loads that have to be done, and how can we streamline things? Can we reduce mixing time more? Have to be careful with that one. Auger speed is a real biggie. We have to have really good movement of that feed in the mixer wagon to get all these different particles to mix. And if it's not turning fast enough, it can be more of a challenge to get a proper mix job done. So those are some biggies. And of course, it can vary. We have more of a hit list that we look at. But those are some of the big ones there.
I know when it comes to vehicle wear, that's, or equipment wear, that's something that I think is really easy to forget in all aspects. You're getting your car maintenance done, getting, your utilities in your home, updated is something that's so easy to forget. And I always recommend people put it on a calendar somewhere, right? Like whether that's a physical calendar on the wall or a reminder in your Outlook calendar, whatever it is, whatever works for you. We have so many ways to give yourselves reminders now.
Very true. And it's building it into making it a habit. It's similar to dry matters on a dairy.
Yeah.
One reason to do dry matters more regularly is so they're a habit. we do them all the time, really know what they are. And likewise with the mixer wagon, a habit would be, and at least a weekly basis, we're looking inside the mixer wagon when it's empty, making sure we don't have any issues there. Whenever there's an oil change or it's being greased, we're opening that mixer wagon, going inside, evaluating it for wear. So having some things tied to, as you're saying there, Gail, some more specific time points are good things to do.
All right. Well, I think that hits a lot of the main points we wanted to talk about. And as I look at the time, it looks like we're kind of getting towards the end of our time together. Any other last insights that you have for our listeners that you think they'd appreciate?
I think just thinking about what we talked about right here with this mixture consistency, it's big. And I want to give you a couple of specific examples here. I think of a recent experience I had where the mixer was feeding 2 pens and it went, half the load was delivered to the first pen and the second half to the next pen. We had about 40% grain for the first pen. And right near the end of that one, it jumped up to 50% grain. So basically, same diet going to 2 pens, one getting 40% grain, 150. That's a huge difference. With our pre-fresh cows, we're trying to be super precise with some of our components that are going in there. And we have to make sure that, again, it's completely consistent from one end of the bunk to the other. So I just encourage people to always be keeping this in mind. Doing it once doesn't take care of it forever. Obviously, we've got changes that are always happening. So we want to be thinking about that to make sure that things are the way that they should be.
It's time for our famous three.
We want to thank the innovative companies and products whose support and trust make this podcast possible.
Want a herd management software designed for you? BovaSync is helping herds by managing data faster and easier. Contact BovaSync today to learn more. Natural Biologics delivers cost-effective solutions to improve health and productivity, helping conquer the rumen health and immunity challenges your animals face. Accurately measure individual cow feed efficiency with the newest advancement from AffiMilk. Visit AffiMilk.com to learn more. That's AffiMilk.com. Evonik Animal Nutrition, sciencing the global food challenges. Cow Manager, ahead of the herd together. Support faster recovery when cows face inflammatory pressure. Contact AHV to discover the new Aspie formula. Reduce dyscalcemia and simplify transition cow care with Cowbell Pro from Chemlock Nutrition. Trusted ingredients, proven performance. Rangin Livestock Nutrition. We partner with a purpose.
Great note to end on. All right. And I think you know what's coming next. We have 3 questions that we ask all of our guests, which I believe you are prepared for, so no surprises. But the first one is, what is your favorite dairy-related book or resource?
It's a close one here.
Oh, well, you can give me 2. It's fine.
I'll give you 2. So I really like SPAC.
So ooh, SPAC, good one.
Available through ADSA. And the way I like to use it is, I didn't make it to a meeting. What was talked about at that meeting? And go into it and look at all those proceedings, look at the presentations, see what different researchers are thinking about. And that's really helpful. Or same thing, it's a researcher, you wanted to see what they've said some over time, just do a search on that researcher.
Yeah.
See different things that come up. Now, I want to dig into the details more. That's where you go to ADSA, Journal of Dairy Science. Mm-hmm. And again, dig into specific research articles some more to get a more in-depth understanding of things.
Yes. SPAC is, I think, not highly rated enough by more people. It's a great resource, but it's kind of a deep cut. Yeah. Yes.
We need to organize all those proceedings into one really nice spot.
I know. It's so handy. Yeah. And it's, I think, only available to ADSA members, or maybe you can pay a separate subscription for it. But another reason to be a member of ADSA is for SPAC accessibility. Don't quote me on anything about subscriptions. Just go look at the website.
I agree.
All right. So what is your favorite non-dairy related book or resource then?
Non-dairy book. It's one I read a few years ago, but I still like going back to it and thinking about it. And you'll appreciate this, Gail. It's by an Iowa native.
Oh.
Have you read Bill Bryson's A Brief History of Nearly Everything?
No, but I've heard that I should.
You should.
Okay.
As should other listeners here, because he does an incredible job of just looking at things over time that are very interesting. And there's several science-based chapters there as well that are written in a format, again, that's very educational, very interesting.
All right. I'll move it to the top of my list. Yeah.
Okay, great.
All right. And then our final question is, what do you think sets successful dairy professionals apart from those who aren't successful?
Well, first, I think we're really fortunate in our industry. We got a lot of great people working in our industry. And I see that across the country where there's a lot of highly skilled, motivated people that are there. So I think we're fortunate to have that. One thing that I think is really important and that I see the best guys doing, when you have a new client going out to a new farm, there's lots of things that you can see that are there that potentially are top on the list. When you've worked with a client longer, you always have to challenge yourself, how can I look at something different? What can I change more on this dairy? So being really continuously working for improvement on a dairy. And the next one is, you got to be a great motivator. You've got to build a case for your story and identifying, again, what's this, not just what's wrong on a dairy, but what are the big things that are most influencing that dairy? And so build your case there and motivate that producer and that team to change. So that's a big one. You got to be a good motivator and think about ways to sell your story. It's the right story that should be sold and to get that done.
Yeah, I think I'm going to steal that one for my dairy challenge kids. It's something I always try to drive home with them is, you guys know a lot of information, right? But it's not just about knowing the best information once you get on farm. It's about convincing somebody that to see it your way. So I like that framework, calling it the motivator.
Good.
So, all right. Well, Bill, it was a pleasure talking with you today. It was great to hear more about what you're working on with Diamond V. And if anybody wants to get in touch with you or stay tuned with the sorts of things that you're working on, is there anywhere that they should look?
Sure. Well, LinkedIn or on our Diamond V site, but LinkedIn's probably the easiest way to try to get in touch with me, or through a Diamond V representative would be fine too.
All right. Very good. Well, thank you again.
Thank you, Gail. It was fun.
Do you feel overwhelmed with mundane tasks that eat up your valuable time? It's time to reclaim your schedule and focus on what truly matters. Get your time back with elite remote talent without a time zone hassle. Delegate $10 an hour tasks to focus on more $1,000 an hour tasks. Schedule your free strategy call at wisevas.io.